Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome back, everyone. This is the Bless Your Boys podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Day. I've got a special guest for you tonight. We've got Cody Stavenhagen from the Athletic Detroit with us. Cody's going to be heading down to, I think you're heading down to spring training this weekend, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. I'll be heading down Sunday.
Awesome. Oh, that's cool. So you got to be looking forward to that after this winter.
Yeah, for sure. It's get some sunshine at the very least. It's going to be different this year and weird, and I think I'll miss kind of the freedom and the access of a normal spring training, but at the same time, can't complain too much about a little bit of time in Florida right now.
Yeah, especially after, this winter has just felt like the most interminable stretch of time in my entire life, I swear. You know, it's just been one disaster from politics to the weather. I got to ask first, how are your peeps down in Texas? Everybody doing okay?
Yeah, for the most part, pretty much everyone I know is just fine. I think a lot of my family out in West Texas, they're on a little bit of a different power setup and either didn't lose power at all or were just on some rolling power outages. Had a couple friends down in Dallas who I think went a stretch there without power, but it seems like everything's okay. My brother's down at Texas A&M and he's doing just fine, so... Yeah, luckily, no one I know was too adversely affected, but definitely scary stuff down there. And thoughts go out to everyone in Texas for sure.
Yeah, but it feels like it takes time sometimes for things to, the government and whoever else to start reacting to something like this. But now that all the eyes are on it, hopefully there's help on the way down there.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, so I guess first things first, we just can't get a moment's peace on a Friday night when Trader Al's in the bargain bins.
Oh, yeah.
So the Tigers sign Julio Teheran, former Braves starter, kind of a shifty little soft tosser who is, kind of known to just work around the edges, has been an effective starter at times, struggled last year with the Angels, but I think he had COVID. You had to deal with, the first new team of his career and then COVID protocols. I'm not really going to take too much out of that. So we'll see. And then they also picked up Willie Peralta, who again, hasn't really been effective for, 4 or 5 years. Was kind of a fifth starter for the Brewers for a while. And it seems like, you think Peralta in particular is more of a relief signing because he's still at least kind of got a big fastball.
Yeah, I think so. The Peralta signing, to be honest, doesn't move the needle for much, much for me at all. I think probably a relief signing that, is he actually going to make the roster? We'll see. He does have some decent stuff, but I don't have my expectations set too high. Teheran is, I don't know, in a way he's very interesting because this is a guy who's a two-time All-Star who has a really good track record. His deal includes up to $4 million in incentives. Basically, if he makes the club and makes up to 20 starts, they're going to pay him $4 million, which is about the range I thought the Tigers would go for a starter. So, from what I'm told, they were never really close on Rick Porcello. That one just kind of got leaked, I think, to make it look like they tried, but they were very far apart with Porcello. They went up to four with incentives with Teheran, but yeah, his stuff. He was never really a hard-throwing guy, but his fastball sinker was down to 88, 89 last year. I think the spin rates on his breaking balls were down quite a bit, too. So he's really not the same pitcher he was back in 2014. But supposedly some reports from his bullpen this offseason that he threw in front of scouts were pretty encouraging. Again, you see the incentives. You see the Tigers would really like this guy to be on the roster and eat up some innings, but I also don't think it's a lock that he even makes the roster. I think he'll really have to go out and earn it for as much as the Tigers need pitching depth. They do have some other options in-house, so I don't think either of these guys are guaranteed a spot.
Yeah, I mean, Peralta probably, less chance of the two, but even, yeah, Tehran, it's sort of like, I mean, I assume this is one of those deals where if the Tigers don't call him up and bring him north pretty quickly, he's a free agent again. I don't think we know that yet, but it's
Yeah, we
probably.
don't. I'd be interested to know, especially coming off a season where he had a 10 ERA. Like, if he'd be content to just get stashed in Toledo for a while, and they can bring him up when you have a couple injuries, that wouldn't be the worst. But usually these deals are structured where the guy can opt out, be a free agent, and try to catch on with another team. So, yeah, we'll have to find out how that shakes out.
Yeah, and you'd think, sometimes with a veteran like that, you'd actually like relish the chance to like go to the minors and actually work on some stuff. But no one ever does. No one wants to pitch in the minors after they've been in the show.
Yeah, it's not the same lifestyle at all.
Yeah. Just a quick look through like Teron's Statcast numbers. Like, I did notice that like his like the four seam and sinker spin are basically the same, but the actual movement diverges a lot, like Spencer Turnbull's does. So. He's probably got some seam shifted wake movement going on with those two pitches. His slider, I think, is like was 20% active spin last year, so basically like a pure gyro ball, which is another type of pitch that it kind of just leans right into what I don't know about Fetter's specialty necessarily, but he's definitely one of those guys who is on the cutting edge with that sort of stuff. So he may be able to. Maybe able to play around there, but overall, what this really—I mean, I think you'd probably agree—what this really says is that the pitching depth in the Tigers minor league system, once you get past Manning, Mize, and Scooble, is pretty bleak with Fieto and Wentz on the shelf, and they need some arms down there just in case, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I know that came up on Twitter today, and it's one of those things you don't always think about, and then when you see it kind of get spelled out, like what's your rotation in Erie this year, or even Toledo, you're not going to have a ton of depth. It's pretty concerning, and suddenly all those criticisms about the lack of depth in the Tigers farm system pop right back up. Because yeah, even though I think you have, six, seven, eight guys who can pitch in the majors this year, you'd like to have probably 9, 10, 11 guys who can pitch in the majors this year, and it's kind of questionable as to whether you actually have that or not.
Yeah, I mean, we're going into camp and we don't really have, I mean, we really have no idea whether or not Michael Fulmer can be a starter again. And based on the way Matt Boyd has pitched basically for, the last year of active duty, you don't really know if he's going to be viable as a starter or not. Like, we'd all like to believe in him because we've seen it work, at times. At least the first couple of years, he was at least, a solid back-end starter and occasionally showed those flashes of more. So. We'll see along those lines, but this also kind of sets them up to where it feels like they don't have to necessarily use Matt Manning or Mize or Scooble unless they want to, which is probably where you want to be. You want to be able to deploy them as you see, fit as, is best for their development rather than, oh God, we're in trouble already. We got to call all these guys up. Presumably one of them, is likely to earn a spot out of spring camp, but yeah, you don't want to be forced to make those decisions. You'd rather be able to make them, based on the player and development. So, yeah, this might all help in those regards, I suppose.
Yeah, I'll be really interested to see how they handle Mize and Scooble. I'm kind of the school of thought that you brought those guys up last year for a reason. Like, let them be big leaguers now. Put them in your rotation unless they just flat out can't handle it. I think both of them struggled last year, but definitely showed they're capable of pitching at the major league level, and in theory should only be better this time around. But then you look like, a lot of times teams, if they have a guy on a minors deal, they're going to at least want to give him a shot. Does that mean you start Casey Mize in AAA and give, Julio Teheran, five starts and see how he does? And if it goes bad, then you pull the plug and call up Mize. And if not, you let those guys simmer in AAA a little longer. I don't know. I think the Fulmer question is really good too. That hasn't been talked about a lot. It's going to be sensitive to even ask about, considering the guy's been known as a starter, but I don't think his role is quite guaranteed at all. I think Boyd's maybe a little more just because they're paying him $6.5 million. But Fulmer's going to have to show some things this spring to be in the rotation, I think.
Yeah, I mean, we don't want to pin too much on, you know, 2 months of coming back from Tommy John and knee surgery,
right.
Meniscus surgery, both. But yeah, that knee surgery really is kind of the kicker. I mean, I think if he just had Tommy John, most of us would kind of expect that, you know, the velocity will probably be mostly back this year. But yeah, having to change his mechanics really throws a wrinkle in that. So we'll just kind of have to see. And I guess that kind of leads me to AJ Hinch, and maybe the first thing I wanted to, you know, kind of ask about him. He's obviously, you know, he's talked a good bit about, you know, the roster during the offseason and since he's been hired, but now he's, you know, clearly like switched into full on like manager mode, you know, and wants his guys competing, doesn't want guys, you know, thinking about like saving bullets for a rainy day or, you know, or taking it easy or anything. He's really trying to amp up the, you know, the competitive atmosphere in camp. What are your kind of your first impressions of AJ Hinch running his first major league or his first camp with the Tigers?
Yeah, to be honest, it's been pretty impressive so far. I think it's, I don't know, I had a lot of respect for Ron Gardenhire and the way he handled stuff in a difficult situation, but just a few days under the AJ Hinch regime have kind of highlighted maybe what the Tigers were lacking in their coaching staff. Hinch and his coaches showed up to spring training, you know, able to write a research paper on every one of these players. They know their names, they know their faces, they know their numbers, their advanced data, their backstories. They came very prepared. Hinch watched every game from last season. Gardenhire, you know, and his staff, like, I think they worked hard. I think they prepared well, but they weren't as well versed in the analytics. And I think they showed up to spring. They didn't necessarily know who everyone was, or they used spring as a time to feel some things out. Whereas Hinch has basically said, you know, you don't have time for that. You have to show up and be able to be in a pretty competitive mode right away. Al Avila this week talked about he was blown away by how far ahead the Tigers seem this year. I would assume compared to the past. And that's because of AJ Hinch. That's because of the guys they hired. They are just putting in a different level of work. And I think as a result, there's going to be a little bit different level of competition right out of the gate.
Yeah. And, you know, Ron Gardenhire and his staff were you know, the word feel kind of describes sort of their style. And obviously they were also, you know, veterans of the game, aware that they were sort of playing out the string, you know, just sort of babysitting the franchise for a couple of years until they started hopefully building things up again. But yeah, I mean, it sounds like Chris Fetter has had like really detailed conversations and really detailed plans for what he wants to, you know, wants these guys to work on already in place, and probably the same true for most of the position players. So they're coming in with like work in mind rather than more of a, well, let's get to know each other and, you know, throw the old ball around and kind of work our way into this slowly. It feels much more of an intense, you know, focused sort of camp in the early going so far.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great way to put it. Some of those early conversations, that feeling out period was done in the off season, and now it's about work. I'm pretty mystified by these, you know, mythical emails that Chris Fetter has sent some of the pitchers with detailed info on their numbers, how their stuff plays in the zone, where it best plays, what their pitching plan looks like going forward. I don't know exactly what these things look like. I wish someone would forward me one on background just so I could know, because it sounds really interesting the way this guy has researched and then compiled that research and sent it to the player in a form that, you know, these guys can kind of synthesize it and start working on things in the off season.
Yeah.
I think it's fair to say Rick Anderson probably was not doing that.
Yeah. I mean, Rick Anderson seemed much more of a, you know, like his specialty was almost more like bullpen kind of coach type stuff. Like, you know, having a little tweak, if you're, you know, your command is off, he can kind of, you know, give you some things to help you get your rhythm back. But to, yeah, again, just more of that, you know, sort of more of that old school mentality where you don't mess with the players too much unless the player wants to be messed with. Whereas, yeah, like, you know, more modern coaches are definitely much more aggressive and like, look, I see this, you know, I know that if you work on this, you know, it's going to improve your game and we're going to focus on that. And just sort of having that that sort of structure for what they want to work on in place right from the jump. So, yeah, it's going to be fascinating to watch. I mean, I think probably we would both agree that the most interesting additions, as it turns out, this offseason were AJ Hinch and Chris Fetter and the coaching staff. So You know, you don't want to really want the coaches and the manager to be the star of the star of the show, but there's a lot of expectations on them. And you know, I'm a big fan of the Chris Fetter hire, fan of the Hinch hire. Love the new coaching staff, but you know, I've been trying to rein it back in because I don't really want to sell anybody a bill of goods that Chris Fetter is going to go in there and just magically turn everyone into aces and all that sort of thing. But watching those guys is going to be kind of the, you know, the key attraction until Mize Manning and Scooble are all in place, I would assume.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I'm as well trying to kind of rein in the hype because the Tigers still have a roster that needs a lot of building. I think Chris Fetter can improve a lot of these pitchers, but that doesn't mean, you know, Matt Boyd's going to win the Cy Young or anything like that this year. There are going to be times this team struggles. There are going to be times some of these pitchers still struggle. It takes time to, you know, as much as Hinch and his staff want to improve the Tigers right out of the gate, and as much as I think there's a chance that that happens to a limited extent, I think it's going to take some time for these guys to instill their culture. I think part of Chris Fetter's plan is building a stronger pitching infrastructure up and down the organization. Yeah. I think there are guys who reach the majors in 3 years who might be better just because of the impact Chris Fetter will have on this entire organization. I think he'll impact how things are done in AA in West Michigan. And hopefully that kind of funnels up to the major league level. You look at a guy like a Joe Jimenez or Matt Boyd or some of these other guys with talent, with stuff, and it's pretty easy to see how maybe Chris Fetter could help them out quite a bit. But you're right. The hype machine has gotten out of hand a little bit, in part because maybe there's just not that much else to talk about. You know, they can't be totally anointed as saviors, but these guys are really smart at the same time. So, you know, when I say that, I'm not just blowing smoke. It's a pretty palpable difference with them in charge.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, obviously, you know, Chris Fetter, I mean, he's a Michigan man. He, you know, he was a part of sort of reinventing the University of Michigan baseball program. So he's going to get some love and, you know, and some early support kind of through that. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we've talked about these things, you know, quite a bit as far as, and we don't necessarily have to go into Keith Law's perception necessarily of the Tigers farm system, but he was notable for, you know, really kind of dinging the Tigers for, you know, sort of the mid-tier depth that they lack after the, you know, top 7-8 guys. And, you know, that part of it, you can argue with where he ranked, you know, the Tigers farm system, but, you know, he's got a point there. And I think we're all hoping that not only, you know, Chris Fetter and, you know, maybe Scott Coolbaugh and some of these guys have an effect even in terms of player development in the minors, but we also haven't seen, you know, Kenny Graham, the new player, you know, development director. We haven't seen Dan Hubbs, who's kind of the pitch design specialist. Georgia Giblin doing the sports science department. Like, all those three were pretty, you know, seemingly important hires last fall, and we never really got to see any of their work because the minor league season was canceled, and it's really hard to get, you know, get much of a feel for how much, you know, time they had to even talk to players via Zoom and get them working on specific things. So yeah, I mean, we're hoping the impact here is organization wide, and you know, that's a lot to ask. That's a lot of demand from for, you know, a new manager and a brand new pitching coach who's never been the pitching coach at the major league level.
Yeah, that is well said, for sure.
Yeah, it's you know, we heard about the Tigers way an awful lot from you know, from Brad Office to Ron Gardenhire, but this feels like where, yeah, you know, like the manager and the major league coaching staff probably will have more say, you would assume, in player personnel decisions and maybe in some of the, you know, the development work that goes on. So we'll see. But yeah, we don't want to get too hype about it. I guess, you know, my impressions now that the off season is probably essentially over, other than, you know, maybe another small pickup somewhere, is that if the Tigers had done the thing I wanted and got one, you know, really good player, like one player that they would consider like a piece of the future, I'd really actually like what they've done, because it does seem like they've played for a little bit more upside. You know, guys like Nomar Mazara and Renato Nunez are a little bit more, you know, they've got like a tool that if the Tigers could help them, they could really stand out, as opposed to, you know, signing Cameron Maybin. And, you know, CJ Krohn obviously had some impact, but, you know, Tyson Ross, Ivan Nova, like those type of guys were just there to sort of fill a role. And it does feel like they've, you know, they've at least shot for guys who might work out, you know, who are younger and at least have power if you can help them to make contact a little bit more. Do you feel kind of a bit of a change in attitude toward what they did in free agency this year?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I'd be interested to know even right there, like how much of that is coming from AJ Hinch and his staff and what they think. I don't know the answer to that, but it seems like the school of thought has shifted a little bit to, yeah, they were looking at these upside guys. It's kind of weird. Like, you know, a lot of people ask, how would you grade the Tigers off season? And I don't know. Like, I'm tempted to probably go like B minus or something like that. Like, I like all of these signings. I think they're smart. You can see the upside. You can see the rationale. I'm with you on, I wish they would have been a little more aggressive, put a little bit more someone who could be considered a piece like a Jock Peterson or someone like that. But I'm really interested to see how Robbie Grossman plays this year. I mean, I think there's a world in which Robbie Grossman is a pretty valuable little outfielder, and in terms of WAR could post numbers that's on par with a Jock Peterson or a Kyle Schwarber. I don't think he'll hit for the power, but I don't think they took a huge step forward. I don't know that the roster is a lot better than it was last year. Some of these guys, the Mazaras, the Nunezes, I think you're lucky if you can get one of those guys to really pan out, and they all won't. But you can at least see, some effort. You can see the thinking, and I think that bodes well for the organization.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of had the kind of offseason I sort of wish they had had, like, in 2018, 2019.
Yeah.
Like, if they had done more of this kind of thing then. I like Robbie Grossman. You know, he's a guy who, had always been sort of a solid player that people thought might break out, and he never really did. But then, with the Athletics, he kind of did. He made some changes to his swing, started pulling more balls in the air, hit for more power. Obviously worked on his defense, and he it wouldn't surprise me if he put up a 3, maybe even a 4 WAR season if everything just came together for him. That's not a bad move at all. Mazara and Nunez, if you can improve either one of them at the plate, there's some potential there. But I think it feels like it's a deeper roster, if only because Casey Mize and Tarik Skubal are probably more ready to contribute this year after getting their feet wet. And they've still, they've still got Manning in the tank. You've still got Isak Paredes, who probably will start at Toledo. But, that's a better quality of guy to bring up if someone else is struggling than they've had in years past. And those guys have a little bit more experience now. I don't really want to like pick a number. I'm the type who hates projecting the win total or anything like that. But yeah. I mean, do you think there's a chance the Tigers could put together like a 70-75 win team here?
I think their best case scenario is probably about 70 wins. And if that's a 70 win season where they're around 500 for most of the first half, that could be a pretty fun, pretty entertaining team to watch. I don't think they'll sustain that level of play a whole year, but yeah, I think there's a world where if Grossman produces, if Mazar produces, if Mize and Skubal look like legit big leaguers, yeah, they could win 70 games. I think I don't think this is going to be the train wreck that the 2019 Tigers were. I think they are actually, if you really look at it, the roster is much improved from there. We're done with the Dawell Lugos and just whoever else cycled in and out that year.
Yeah, a lot of them were forgettable.
You can see the roster. Yeah, yes. You can see how this roster has matured, is slowly setting itself up for the future. People will ask the Tigers play 500 baseball. Could they make some kind of crazy surprise run? And the talent is still not there for that. But I think 70 games would be an optimistic target for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if the Tigers are hanging around 500 come late July, probably what that means is that they've actually got a few trade chips to offer this year, which would be great.
I like that too. Yeah. That would be terrific.
Yeah. You know, that would be the nice thing. And I guess to kind of go back to the rotation, that also kind of speaks to Daniel Norris, because, you know, there's a school of thought out there that Daniel Norris maybe deserves another shot at being a starting pitcher. But because, you know, this is the last year before he hits free agency, it seems like it would behoove the Tigers to just sort of leave him be, you know, let him work two innings at a time, maybe three in the bullpen, a spot start here or there, but basically try to groom him to be traded, you would assume.
Yeah, I think, you know, look, I know pulling off trades is a lot easier said than done. It's not easy to do, but I wonder if they should have traded him last year or this offseason when he was coming off looking really strong in these three-inning stints. I think, you know, I think it'll be tough to get his value much higher than that unless he – I don't know. I mean, maybe there's a world in which he's in this rotation and he's pitching well and you get a decent little prospect for him. It'll just be tough to get a lot of value for like a swing man for half a season, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's not impossible that he could end up being almost as valuable as maybe Justin Wilson was in 2017. Mm-hmm. If he can kind of continue on with what he did last year, there just aren't that many, you know, fairly hard throwing, you know, lefty relievers with good stuff. You know, they don't come a dime a dozen. And so
that's true. The lefty helps out.
Yeah. But I think, yeah, I mean, we need to see like a little bit more of the old velocity come back. Like if he's, you know, pumping 94, 95 this year, pitching as aggressively as he did last year and having similar success, you know, I could see them getting something from him. I'd almost rather that they just, you know, see if they could talk him into an extension. But I tend to assume Daniel at some point would like to live near the sea during the baseball season.
Yeah, that's funny. If you think about it, Detroit's probably not ideal for him geographically. And maybe there is another team out there where you could, you know, get a real shake at the rotation. We'll see how it goes. I definitely like Daniel a lot. He's one of those guys you hope to see have success and I do. I think there's a lot left in that arm. We've seen flashes of it at times. And so, again, you know, how does that play under Chris Fetter, under A.J. Hinch? Maybe it works out.
Yep. Yeah, you know, I think watching them manage the bullpen this season should be fascinating because there isn't really, you know, anyone with a set role. You know, you could look at Jose Cisnero or Brian Garcia or Joe Jimenez, if he can get it together, those guys could all, you know, be in the mix for the closer role. Maybe Gregory Soto, because, you know, the stuff is just bananas when he's on. But they have also just sort of a lot of, yeah, you know, kind of guys that you're just not really sure how they're going to be deployed. You know, Buck Farmer is going to be a free agent. They picked up Erasmo Ramirez on a minor league deal. Derek Holland, you would assume, is another one of those guys like Tehran that they'd kind of like to keep around and like get a good long look at and work with a bit, but as a reliever. But yeah, it's just sort of hard to see how all the pieces are going to fit here because they have kind of added a lot of, you know, interesting, you know, veteran at least players on minor league contracts, and watching them piece it all together this spring should be fairly entertaining, I think.
Yeah, you're right. I think that's like, it's nice that they have some entertaining pieces, some guys who are going to be fun to follow. It's not great that pretty much your entire pitching staff is that way, or yeah, your entire bullpen for sure. None of these guys are set. You know, maybe a couple of them could really have a breakout year. Maybe a couple of them tank. Maybe they all tank. You know, it's hard to know. I wish there were a little more stability, especially in that bullpen. But you have some talent with those arms. I think Hinch and the staff probably going to be able to maximize that talent maybe a little more than the Garden High regime was able to. And I think Hinch is a guy who's known for being somewhat creative with his bullpen. He said this week that he plans to name a closer, but, you know, if he needs to deploy the closer in the seventh inning because that's going to be the biggest spot, he's open to doing that. So I just think Hinch is going to make some in-game decisions that will be that will just be kind of fun to watch and see how they play out. I think he's more open to thinking outside the box, and that might mean some creativity out of the bullpen.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, what we really like about A.J. Hinch is just that sense that, you know, he has, you know, such a thorough grasp of the analytical side and sort of like the, you know, the old school baseball side, both that he can apply, you know, he should at least be able to apply some feel successfully and seems willing to do that. You know, he's not going to play it, you know, strictly by the book, but he knows the book really well in a very advanced manner. Yeah. And that should inform, the decision-making as we go along.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I mean, how are you feeling so far about, like, his interactions with the media? I mean, has he been fairly open? I mean, we had to notice that, you know, they kind of restricted, you know, access, it seems like, to the coaching staff. Like, they're just not really going to have the coaching staff available for comment too much. And I thought that was kind of interesting as well. And I didn't know if that was kind of an AJ Hinch thing or if that was more of a Tigers thing, do you think, or...
Yeah, it's definitely a Hinch thing. It's kind of interesting. Hinch had that policy in Houston. I remember hearing people complain about it. Like when they came to Detroit, like you couldn't talk to Donnie Kelly, you know, when he was on their staff. People wanted to talk to Cora when he was the bench coach, and they were pretty much off limits to the media. I had always assumed that that was a Jeff Luhnow thing because the Houston front office was known for being very proprietary, trying to keep kind of everything in house. Astros media relations staff doesn't have the best reputation. Turns out that was actually more of a Hinch thing because we, you know, someone asked him about it today, just like, hey, are we going to be able to talk to assistants? Because we hadn't talked to any yet this spring via Zoom. And he basically said no. And then he kind of backtracked it to like, well, maybe. So I think we're still awaiting some clarity. I think it'll probably be a case by case basis if there's like a legitimate reason to talk to an assistant coach or maybe for a feature story or something, maybe that will happen. But it doesn't sound like we're going to be getting, you know, a ton of time with Chris Fetter to pick his brain about Matt Boyd's slider or, you know, kind of the nuts and bolts like that. Hinch basically said that's because he wants, you know, it goes back to messaging, which certain coaches can be kind of paranoid about. He wants one message going to the players. There definitely can be times in the media where the manager says one thing about the player and then you go talk to the hitting coach and he says something different. And when the player reads that or sees it on Twitter or whatever, that can be a little confusing. You know, sometimes coaches can speak out of line and be a little more blunt than the manager ever would. You know, so it sounds like that's kind of where Hinch is coming from. Obviously, as a reporter, I don't like that. If I had to guess, I'm not sure the Tigers, you know, in terms of their media relations staff and the organization as a whole really like it because they're trying to tout up this coaching staff and get them a lot of publicity. It's one of the things that the Tigers are trying to sell. Hey, look, we have really smart coaches now. That said, Hinch is actually, you know, one of the most media savvy managers in the game. It'll be a little easier to go without talking to assistants because Hinch, again, I hate to pile on Gardenhire, but if you asked Ron Gardenhire a question about a pitcher, the answer was going to go something like, well, the ball comes out of his hand good, but he misfires sometimes. And you could pretty much copy and paste that for the entire pitching staff. Hinch is able to speak in detail about these guys a little more. He gives very thoughtful, very substantive answers. He usually knows what you're trying to get at when you ask a question. He has a reputation for being extremely good with the media. So far, he's been extremely good with the media here in Detroit. A little bit curious to see, you know, will the Astros scandal make him less open or more guarded? So far, it really hasn't. So far, he's been pretty open. I have a big story with AJ coming out early next week, hopefully. It seems like he's been pretty open. It seems like, you know, if you want to read into it too much, maybe he knows he needs the media on his side a little bit. But I think also, I mean, I think he's a pretty low-key guy who's not, you know, who's able to still act like a human and just have human conversations with people. And I think that's one of the reasons he's liked by players. And that translates over to the media, but then every now and then when things like the assistant coaches pop up, you're kind of reminded that like, oh, this is a very competitive industry, and any competitive person will always be somewhat, you know, try to keep the media at arm's length. And if I were the manager of an MLB club, I'd probably be the same way.
Yeah, it is interesting. I didn't really realize that had been sort of the policy with the Astros. And yeah, kind of what I was getting at was, you know, is this sort of a reaction to kind of just some of the chaotic, you know, over-controlling nature that the Astros, you know, kind of seem to have with the media in general, and maybe a reaction to, you know, sort of the whatever factionalism was going on over there, you know, wanting to really present, you know, a unified message and a unified front and be the one guy that, you know, kind of speaks on behalf of the team. It definitely helps when you're AJ Hinch and you're capable of doing that, you know, with candor and humor and, you know, and enough insight to, you know, to sort of help the writers, you know, get what they need, without having to necessarily get quotes from the whole staff and all that. But yeah, you know, that was kind of when I heard that, like, you know, you hate to speculate and we wouldn't write about this sort of thing, but you just get in your head, like all the, you know, the Mickey Callaway scandal, you know, some of the things that have gone on in baseball the last couple of years, you know, you could see a desire, you know, from teams to sort of, you know, choke the process down to a narrow pipeline to where they, you know, they know where the reporters are, they know who's being allowed to talk to them and vice versa, and sort of, you know, keeping a little bit tighter grip on that, which, you know, it doesn't necessarily impact the fans' enjoyment of the game, but it can affect, like, your impact, you know, serious fans, you know, getting answers to the questions that they have sometimes. So I guess we'll just have to sort of see how it goes. It's early. You know, maybe this is his policy to sort of, you know, keep things at arm's length for the time being and then see how things go later on. I mean, the fact that you all have to talk over Zoom is already, you know, kind of a distancing mechanism as well. So they've got that going for them too.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's not even the same. And, you know, bringing an assistant coach into Zoom is also more complicated and everything. So, it's different. Unfortunately, it reminds me of, you know, I covered college football for several years there, and that's the way a lot of big time college football programs are. And they're known for being super paranoid about information and controlling the narrative. And I think even in college, it's like, sometimes you don't want your offensive coordinator in the media too much, because that might mean he's going to go get a head coaching job somewhere, you know?
Right.
I don't think that's the case so much on a major league coaching staff, but, you know, I've been around that before. It does affect the, like, I don't know, especially under Gardenhire, if you wanted to know some nuts and bolts about a pitcher, it'd be better to go to Rick Anderson. And he didn't talk a ton because he was a pretty busy guy, but when he did, he was really informative, and I would usually learn something. I think it'll be a little better under Hinch, just because he tends to give so much detail in the first place that, again, like, maybe you don't really need to go to that assistant coach as much. I would say probably not something, you know, 99% of fans will really notice at all, but as writers, you know, it'll at least give us something to complain about over the course of the year. It'll be a great thing to complain, like, in a bad mood in September, you know, and it's late in the year and it's like, why can't I talk to Scott Coolbaugh?
I know. But the season's almost over. Come on.
Yeah, you know.
Yep, there it is. All right, let's just kind of hit on a couple points before we wrap it. I looked through a little bit of the chat that you did on The Athletic today. You know, fans can write in and ask Cody questions. I don't know, do you do this like every week or every 2 weeks or something like that?
I think it's trying to go for once a month.
Yeah, that sounds more reasonable, to be honest. I was like, I wouldn't want to do that every week. People just firing questions at you.
I enjoy it, but yeah, it's, I don't know. I don't know if my bosses are going to listen to this or not. I'd be willing to do it more often, to be honest. I think it's kind of fun just to interact with people. Sometimes I get story ideas.
Oh yeah.
Just from doing it. It's nice kind of see what people are thinking about, what they want to know. So
yeah, that's true. I use our comment sections for the same way. And actually, I guess writing it is better. What my experience of doing radio is sometimes, you know, just informs my opinion about that, because sometimes you just, you know, you get on a show with the host that you don't know real well, and you just start getting this rapid fire quiz, you know, with questions coming out of left field. Yeah. And you know, like, whoa, slow it down. But yeah, if you can write out the answers, that probably does help. But I noticed one person asked you about Willie Castro and kind of like what, you know, what would have to happen this year for Willie Castro to hold the shortstop job, you know, long term, and whether or not, you know, he even has a chance of doing that, considering that we're all hoping they pick up a free agent next year. So yeah, what would you kind of, you know, pin as like a good goal, a good target for Willie Castro's season this year?
Yeah, I tend to try to take like a more measured approach rather than be like a hot takes guy in just terms of how I analyze the team. But I think one of my hotter takes is it doesn't matter what Willie Castro does. The Tigers need to sign a stud shortstop next offseason if they want to win the World Series one of these days. And if Willie Castro has a really good year, if he's somehow able to sustain his crazy, you know, BABIP and hits over 300 and plays capable defense, I think that's great. I think that means you have a future second baseman, which you're also really lacking.
Yes.
You know, yeah. I don't see any, you know, look, even if Willie Castro, I think best case, he's a zero defensive run save shortstop. I don't think he's ever going to be a plus defender at short. He was the worst in the league, although in a smaller sample last year. Just the eye test, I don't like his footwork. I think that can only improve so much. He struggled with his throwing arm a little bit. Maybe he can play well enough to stick there, get you through this year. The Tigers think he can still improve, but yeah, I think it doesn't matter. I think you need to go get Trevor Story or Carlos Correa or Javi Baez or Lindor or Corey Seager, because I think next year's class presents a pretty rare opportunity to go get a very valuable player at a premium position. And there's enough of them in the market that if you miss on the top guy, if you get outbid by the Yankees or whoever, you can still get another guy. You know, I think the Tigers have to set that as priority number one. And if Willie Castro is playing well, that's just a bonus. You can always find somewhere else for him, most likely second base.
Yeah. Yeah. I wholeheartedly agree with that. I mean, do you feel like that's really likely though, that the Tigers are actually like thinking about next year as a starting point to actually start making some, you know, more substantive moves rather than kind of, you know, just picking small guys up here and there?
Yeah, that's the sense I get. You know, maybe that's just wishful thinking, but I think it makes a lot of sense for as much as, you know, people love to criticize Chris Illich and Al Avila, they have always kind of said, we're going to spend when the time is right. You know, what's the definition of the time being right? That's in the eye of the beholder. But, you know, if you show some progress this year, if you have Mize, Scooble, and Manning pretty much all in the majors, Green and Torkelson knocking on the door, you know, that core is pretty much there. I think that means it's time to start winning. And especially, like, I think the makeup of the class could affect it too. If Francisco Lindor were the only shortstop in free agency next year, you know, maybe the Tigers wouldn't be as aggressive. But I think it's you know, we'll see what happens with Willie Castro, but most likely you don't have a surefire shortstop in this rebuild. You don't really have one in the system. I think it makes too much sense to go get one while you can, and yeah, make that first big signing and get this thing rolling a little bit. It'd be cool if you could pick up a Justin Verlander too, or maybe even another outfield bat. That might be getting a little too optimistic. I don't know if they'll have this huge haul, but I get the sense that the Tigers front office is thinking the same way, especially when it comes to that shortstop position. I think there's a strong chance that they'll try to be players for one of those guys.
Yeah. And it's harder for us perhaps, especially for you, but yeah, I mean, for fans, I mean, there's every reason to expect that the Tigers should start spending money and to be willing to demand that a little bit next year. You know, they've actually cut the payroll from last year and haven't necessarily reinvested all of even Jordan Zimmerman's money this year. So it does feel like at a certain point it's time to go. And I don't really like to talk about, you know, rebuilds as like some kind of set process or like a normal part of the game. Cause I don't really feel like that kind of a rebuild, like the full teardown, like that kind of thing should be necessarily a regular occurrence. But if you look at it that way, you know, the time to start, you know, start pushing in and going for it is when, yeah, you start getting your top prospects, you know, to the major leagues. I mean, when, you know, Ronald Acuna Jr., got to the Braves and you know, had a half season to prove what he could do. You know, they started adding players in there. And so, yeah, I mean, if the three pitchers make it up this year and look like they're ready to contribute, you would think, yeah, that it would have to be go time. You know, the thing I wrote about with Trevor Story in particular was just that, you know, the problem, I think, next offseason is just that there's also going to be a lot of competition. You're going to have, you know, the Texas Rangers just traded away Elvis Andrus, and, you know, they're in a rebuilding mode. They need a shortstop. Trevor Story is a Texan, I happen to notice. And, you know, the Angels are going to be free of Albert Pujols' money. They've got Jose Iglesias this year, but they don't have a long-term solution. And then there's all those teams, the Cubs, the Mets, the Astros, the Dodgers, all of them are either going to extend the shortstop they have or be in the market as well. So, yeah, you know, we certainly can't guarantee it, because there may be some fearsome competition out there, but you would hope that would kind of be the goal. And I think, you know, apart from Willie Castro, like, you look at him and Jamer Candelario, and maybe those two guys are sort of like the best bellwether for what the offense is going to be this year, because if they can both not necessarily sustain like the absolute peak that they had, you know, briefly in 2020, but if both of them are above average hitters, like, you know, 105 to 115 WRC plus performers this year, you know, you start to feel like, okay, there's, you know, there's some solid pieces around. And if you can add in, you know, one or two more and get Green and Torkelson there, you know, the Tigers are going to pick high in the draft this year. I think we both expect that, yeah, you know, 70 wins is probably like maybe even a little bit high for an over-under mark this year. So the odds are good they're going to pick, you know, sixth or seventh in 2022 as well. And hopefully that turbocharges the farm system to keep the pipeline rolling as all these guys get into the majors. So we'll see. We'll see. But at some point, they've got to start doing
something.
There's
a lot to be decided. They're going to have to somehow convince a star player to want to come to Detroit. That's why I'm going to go out on a limb right here, and I'm going to predict that Carlos Correa is the guy because of his ties with AJ Hinch. I don't know this full story, but his ties with Hinch go back before the Astros. AJ Hinch, when he was the VP of pro, he wasn't even an amateur scout, but he's the VP of pro scouting. But for some reason, he was one of the first guys to go see Carlos Correa, internationally. One of the first guys, I think, to really be in contact with him when Hinch was working in the Padres organization. So they go back a long time. That could be the type of thing that could sway one of these guys to come to the Tigers.
Yeah. And, you know, we've talked about, you know, Pudge Rodriguez keeps getting brought up as sort of like the example of that. But there is sort of that thing where you have to get the first guy or two on board in order to convince, you know, other free agents to come on a reasonable deal and help you out. And finding that first couple pieces can be tricky. And yeah, I mean, the relationship with Correa makes sense. The relationship with Verlander both makes sense. If you brought both of them in next year, the payroll would probably still be a good deal under $100 million, or maybe right about it, pretty close to $100 million. And then, yeah, maybe you go from there. Maybe you change the culture and the reputation of the Tigers. The prospects are all filtering in by then, the top guys. And yeah, you just hope that there's enough coming after that they can, you know, trade and develop to fill out the roster. Because yeah, I mean, I don't think any of us expect to ever, you know, anytime soon anyway, reach the heights that Mike Ilitch was willing to spend to win a World Series. It just doesn't seem like we're ever going to get near that again.
Yeah. And I think we've seen why it can almost be dangerous to go that deep in.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, and that's been the whole goal of this rebuild, is to turn this into an organization that makes smart and savvy decisions. And that means you pick when to spend and when to not spend. And that doesn't mean you're going to be operating, you know, only buying out of the bargain bin for the next 5 years. Like, I think they'll go sign a premium player or two and probably be judicious, you know, in terms of the types of extensions they hand out, try to build around younger, controllable guys. That's one reason that the Pudge thing, like I definitely get it, but free agency has changed so much since like 2004. Really, the game has changed a lot. Like, it was never going to be realistic for the Tigers to sign JT Realmuto this offseason. As like cool as that would have been, it just wasn't going to happen. He wasn't going to want to come to Detroit. And the thing that the Tigers will have to sell more, like, look, they got Pudge Rodriguez because they offered him more money and more years than anyone else when there are some concerns about Pudge's back you know.
Yeah, and he was also, yeah, I mean, he was, you know, I mean, JT Realmuto is 30, I think, but, I mean, Pudge was even a little bit older and a little bit more, like...
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, like he was only going to give you another year or two of real Pudge performance.
And but anyway, you're going to have the selling point of, we have Casey Mize, we have Spencer Torkelson, we have Riley Green, and I think that's a good point on Pudge. I just pulled up his page. I mean, I think just the name Pudge, you know, like, he was worth 4.7 WAR in 2004, but on the 2006 World Series team, like, he's only worth 2.9 WAR, which, he was a really good catcher. Obviously, he was a great defensive catcher, but he was kind of well past his MVP prime at that point, even when he was with the Tigers. By the time the Tigers were actually good, he was on the decline. So I think because he was such a name and a marketable player, that almost gets over romanticized a little bit. Now, granted, that was great for changing the culture. It was great for attracting other people to Detroit. But in a lot of ways, it's not even really comparable to, like, bringing in Realmuto. So
yeah, it wasn't a competitive move so much as it was like a statement kind of move. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know, you know, we put out our top 30 list just this week, and what I've been thinking a lot about is the fact that, you know, we just don't really know what to expect. And, you know, when I write up these prospect reports on guys, most of them, you're kind of just going back to what you said last year and, you know, and kind of saying, and who knows what might have happened, you know, in the past year. And, I guess that's the thing. It's going to be weird to see, because there are, you know, there are some relievers like Zach Hess, you know, maybe like a Jason Foley. Alex Lang is another one who the Tigers like a lot. And, you know, you never know, like maybe one or all three of those guys, you know, took a little step forward, you know, over the past year, and some of those guys could pop. So that'll be, you know, all those storylines will be interesting to follow as well, just because so many of those guys were out of the limelight for a while. The Tigers do have some of the, you know, the early big expenditures that they made in international free agency back in, you know, 2017, 2018, when they started sort of going a little bigger for the top guys. Those guys are now 18, 19, some of them 20 years old. So, yeah, I mean, overall, like, the whole organization, like, this needs to be a year where we hopefully see a lot of development coming, or we may be in for another couple more years of a tough go. But yeah, there's just going to be so much to watch on that score too, just because so many of these guys have been out of the spotlight, and a year in development time, obviously, for a 19, 20, 21 year old guy is just, you know, it's a lifetime. So, it's also really hard to predict what impact some of those guys, you know, might have, but yeah, it really just feels like that starting, to kind of tie it back to where we began, the starting pitching depth just wasn't there. And, you know, it makes sense to try to address that. And the Tigers probably overpaid a little bit for some of these guys like Holland and Turan, but to have them around through camp and give you those options, at least sort of, just sort of solidifies things and keeps you from having to make any desperate decisions that you don't want to make. So, yeah, there's going to be a lot to watch this year, even if the product on the field still isn't quite what we'd want. But I don't know. I feel like this bit of optimism creeping in that I haven't had in a long time. And I'm trying to fight it a little bit because it's weird. It feels weird, especially when I'm still kind of disgruntled about the off season and the fact that we didn't do a whole lot. So, but it's going to be a lot more interesting, you know, team to watch this year, I think, in so many ways. And at least we have that to look forward to.
I think it is too. I think you can just at least see, like, the future coming into focus a lot more. Like, I think I do. Like, I think the worst of this thing is over, and they might not win a lot of games this year, but, you know, yeah, like, I wrote this in a story the other day. Like, these prospects grew up fast, man. It's crazy to think that Mize, Manning, and Scooble will probably all be in the majors this year. Like, they're, like, those guys are here. And Torkelson and Green, if they hit in the minors this year, they're not going to be super far behind. So you can see things coming to fruition. Like, the really dark ages are over. I think this team will play better baseball and generally be a lot more fun to watch than that 2019 Tigers team that was just abysmal. Maybe that's easy to say in February. Like, maybe we'll all be sick of this team by the summer. But I think the trajectory of the organization, like, you can see it trending in a much better direction than you could a couple years ago. And doesn't mean that the Tigers are going to win the 2024 World Series. They got a lot of moves to make. They have a lot to do to really build this roster still. But it's going to be more entertaining. It's going to be more interesting. And if you're really a diehard fan who's into what's going to happen with Teherin and Holland and these guys, like, they're just some interesting moves to watch in terms of how this team's going to handle things day to day, how things will be done differently under AJ Hinch. So I'm definitely excited about it too. I'm pretty excited to cover this team, even though knowing it might not be the greatest team ever, it has a feeling of being the ground floor of something pretty exciting to me. And I hope that's not just spring optimism, but we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah. I mean, I think at worst, you know, or at least, you know, the days where it wasn't even just bad, but it almost had nothing to do with what was going to happen in the future are over.
Yeah.
So,
yes, that's a great way to put it.
Yeah. So at least, you know, hopefully we've reached the point where the build is beginning in whatever form. You know, I've always felt, you know, fairly confident, you know, based on the way they were doing things, that the Tigers would get back to being a 500 team, say by 2023, somewhere in there. And then we'll have a whole nother, you know, row over, you know, whether or not Alavila is, you know, the guy to actually build the World Series roster.
Exactly.
But yes, progress is coming. Look forward to seeing what coverage you've got coming for us from Lakeland. Have a great time down there. Enjoy the weather. You've earned it. Suffering through these Michigan winters up here, you know, it takes time to get used to, man.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, I appreciate it, Brandon. Thanks. And you take care as well.
All right. Take care, brother. Have a good night.
Yeah, you too.